Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's Joe Beningo and Evan Roberts on The Fan.
Joe and Evan. Evan and Joe. On WFAN Sports Radio. In the New York, no. Gotta go to Joe and Evan. Evan and Joe.
All right, 305 on The Fan, hour two of our radio program. Joe and Evan in the afternoon, 877-337-6666 is the phone number here to 6 o'clock. Mike Francesa, of course, will come your way. Ernie Acosta in Manhattan. We're live from the Town Fair Tire studio with nobody on top of that beach Town Fair Tire. Absolutely nobody.
He is the radio voice of the New York Mets, and now you can hear him basically every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. doing a show with Susan Waldman, and that is the great Howie Rose. Howie, how you been?
What's up, Howie?
Hey, guys. Hey, guys. I'm well. I'm actually, as we, somewhat understatedly, I guess, celebrate the anniversary of the birth of WFAN, which was back on July 1st, 1987. I'll also be doing an hour this Saturday between noon and 1 o'clock. And a lot of that will be spent looking back to the days we had the Rangers on our air, and specifically 1994. So Sal Messina is going to join me on Saturday. We'll check in with Red Light, see what he's up to, and reminisce.
Very good.
Is your biggest memory when you go back to July 1st, 33 years ago? What's your biggest memory from that day?
This is going to take me a little while to explain, so bear with me here, okay?
Okay.
It's one of the great examples of unabashed front-running in the history of radio. Now, Evan's probably too young to remember the reference I'll make in a minute, but Joe's not. It was very reminiscent of the very last scene of the iconic Mary Tyler Moore show. Remember when everybody in that newsroom was huddled together and they take little baby steps? I don't know if it means anything to you, Joe, but there are people who certainly will remember. But anyway, mm-hmm. I had been working at WHN Radio, which was the same station that was going to morph into WFAN on July 1st, 87. Now, that was a country music station, and I had worked there on and off since 1977. So I had a lot of friends and relationships there. And some of those people were about to lose their jobs. So we were in the studio immediately opposite, directly opposite, the air studio where Susan would utter the first words in FAN history. So as I think it was Dan Taylor was playing the last song in the history of WHN radio, all of us from WHN were huddled into that same kind of scrum that I just described from the Mary Tyler Moore show. I mean, they were crying. It was very emotional. I was in the middle of all that. And then, suddenly, that ends, that record ends, and WFAN's about to take air. I basically crawl out of that studio and away from that emotional mess and stand right behind Susan in our brand new WFAN studio, jumping up and down with excitement, just like all the executives were. So that's my biggest memory of July 1st, 87. Front running like you've never seen before.
I got to bring this up, Howie, because, of course, I was a caller at one point many, many years ago.
Joe from Saddle River.
Indeed. And if I remember correctly, you would do Monday night shows. Okay.
I remember
you doing shows on Monday night. And I would call in after the usual disaster from the Jets the day before. okay? Right? You know, right? And call you. I mean, I will never forget. I think I did this a lot. Am I right? Are you
a lot? This? A lot. I depended on you. You were one of my favorite callers. I didn't even have to watch. You think I'm kidding? I didn't even have to watch the Jet game because you would call me at 7:05 and basically recite play for play what happened during the entirety of the 60-minute game, which usually did not end well for the Jets.
Usually. Exactly. Right.
Usually. Yeah.
Right. I remember those days well. And no question. That's funny. No doubt
about it. Throughout this this quarantine of no sports, I find myself every night on YouTube either watching an old game or just watching something from the past. And I think it was a few weeks ago, I found myself listening to you. It was somebody put this on YouTube and it was tremendous.
Wow, you are struggling, brother.
Yes. Don't ask some of the things I've been watching. I end up listening.
Riverdale, come on.
Well, Riverdale's been fantastic. We can't knock that. I mean, it's crazy.
I'd rather read an Archie comic.
There you go.
May 29th, 1990, Mets Extra. And you talking about the firing of Davey Johnson and subsequently the hiring of Bud Harrelson. Take us back to that day and everything that was going through your mind.
You know, what's significant is as much the aftermath as that day. It's very interesting that you bring that up. We kind of expected that Davey might get fired because it had just come down to that. You know, he and Frank were at odds for almost the entirety of Davey's run with the Mets. And, you know, the way things were trending, it was not difficult to see where the team was headed. And I suppose as objectively as I could look at it, it was getting to be time for a change if it wasn't exactly at that moment. So anyway, what happened was they made the move, fired Davey. Buddy Harrelson was going to be the manager. And Buddy, who remains a friend to this day, I mean, people thought that the whole thing with the radio show, which happened a year later, you know, was a personal thing. It was anything but. And so the genesis of that was that when Davey was fired, that night Buddy wanted, or actually Bob Murphy, who did a pregame show or during which, I can't even remember what the context was. I think Bob Murphy did his own pregame show after I did Mets Extra. That was it. Mm-hmm. I did a Mets Extra pregame show, then there was the Mets pregame show, and then there was Play Ball. And Buddy wanted, and Murph wanted, the first interview that Buddy did as manager to be with Murph, which was fine. So I had Frank Cashin come on with me. Now, when Frank made the announcement that he was firing Davey, he said, what all general managers do, well, you know, this is not just one man we're blaming here. We all deserve some share of the blame. And so, being a journalist, when I spoke to Frank, I kind of called him out on that. And I said, okay, you said when you fired Davey that we all take some of the blame. What specifically do you take the blame for? Well, it sounded like there was, and it might have only been for a second, but it felt like an hour's worth of dead silence. And I don't remember the exact words, but I think to paraphrase, Frank came back and said, well, I'll take all of the blame if you'll give me all of the credit for what went on before. With a little anger in his voice. That, you heard that, Evan, right? I'm not imagining this?
No,
or maybe
I heard
you didn't
that,
hear
yes.
that because you wouldn't have heard the pregame, right?
Well, it was more you talking about and kind of going through everything that occurred in the decision and how it felt inevitable. So, no, I didn't hear that part. The description
with Frank?
Yeah.
With Frank? Did you hear the interview with Frank?
No.
Oh, okay, because that's what I'm getting at. This
yeah, yeah,
on...
no, not that part. Just
it
to...
does sound very okay. Frank Cashin-esque.
Yeah, well, the invitation was spot on.
Yes.
Well, but that was the beginning of some trouble that I had with the front office because the aftermath of that pregame show, remember, I was in Astoria doing the pregame from the studio.
Right.
Frank was with the team in Cincinnati. And after that game, he ended up taking some of the broadcast crew, out for dinner or drinks or whatever, just to kind of, you know, talk them up on what the rest of the situation was. And from what I understand from very reliable sources who were in attendance that night, Frank was ripping me a new one up and down for that line of questioning. And he said stuff like, he said, I don't understand it. If we're selling fish, why are we selling bad fish? He thought that, you know, in his words, a home team broadcaster should, and again, this is a direct quote from Frank, root for the home team. So when I got word of that, I knew he was PO'd at me, and I always felt that the one thing to do when you know you got somebody's attention like that is to talk it out. So I made an appointment to see Frank at his office. And this is the absolute honest truth. For 45 minutes, we went back and forth about me, my philosophy for doing the pregame show, and et cetera, et cetera. And he brought Al Harris into that meeting immediately because Frank kind of made believe that he didn't even know what I was talking about, which was malarkey. But anyhow, at the end of that meeting, Al Harris said to me, and I quote, he said, look, if you want to criticize players for poor play, fine. You want to second guess or criticize the manager, fine. But don't criticize us. Okay? That was a direct quote from Al Harris in that meeting. From that point on, under that management, I was sunk. And that's why they, you know, made some adjustments to when I would come on the air prior to and after games for a year or two after that. But as soon as Al Harris was fired as GM, Fred Wilpon came right to me and said, look, you know, we need to right a wrong here, and we're bringing you back. And and that's how everything, you know, happened all during my days at WFAN.
Wow. Talking to the great Howie Rose, of course, the radio voice of the Mets. I remember those when, you know, the classics with Davey, though. I mean, you know, you talk about your post-game show with you had some great moments with Davey. I mean, that was some good stuff. You had a very good relationship with Davey Johnson. And those interviews afterwards were always classic stuff, Howie.
Thanks, Joe. And I'm very proud of what that pregame show was, because I hesitate to go as far as to say that it was groundbreaking, but I think it was largely unique from the perspective of the types of questions that managers would usually handle on what technically was, quote, their own show. You know, it was called the Davey Johnson Report.
Right.
And look, in this market, if I played that anything other than with the same sensibilities that one of the beat writers for a newspaper would, I'd be a laughingstock. So not difficult at all, you know, for me to ask the questions. But in the early sort of days, Davey was pretty uncomfortable answering them. And we didn't exactly have it out, but, you know, we had a rather heated discussion one day where I said, you know, look, you just got to see where I'm coming from. And then a light bulb went off in Davey's head, because when we became WFAN on July 1st of that first year, 87, that I was doing Mets Extra, all of a sudden the phone calls that Davey might hear about, which happened in a very concentrated amount of time before and after a game, well, now they were 24/7, right?
Right.
And so I think Davey finally figured, you know what? I welcome all of these questions now, because I'm going to tell these people exactly why I make blue, so they'll understand exactly what I'm thinking. And from that moment on, man, it was smooth sailing, and we had some dandies, because late in that 87 season, he was having trouble with Frank, and they came up with this bizarre idea that Davey would manage one more year and then go into the front office, which Davey really wanted no part of. And for a couple of weeks at the end of 87, Davey was like a wounded puppy. And he poured every emotion out that he had about what was going on those pregame interviews. And I salute him for that, because he went farther than I ever expected a manager would. And that's what made those shows so special to me. So yeah. Thank you for the nice words.
And by the way, shouldn't they retire Davey's number? And I understand it's also David Wright's number. I get that. But, I mean, you know, look, Gil Hodges was probably, God knows how great it would have went when Gil had he stayed alive. And he probably was a better, I would say he was a better manager overall than Davey. But Davey's, I mean, he was the manager over the greatest era of Met baseball. Doesn't he, shouldn't there be something for him? In my mind, there should be, Howie.
You know what, there is, because, and I'm, you know, not going to ascribe this to anybody else. I'm on the committee that makes those decisions. So I can tell you point blank that although we have discussed retiring other numbers subsequent to the 36, which will be retired for Jerry Kuzman,
right.
At some point, it was supposed to be this year, obviously. Now that's all changed. But we have discussed retiring others. Obviously, David is in play for down the road a little bit. But I got to tell you, the discussions were more along the lines of, number five is going to be David Wright forever, and Davey Johnson is recognized in the Mets Hall of Fame, and that's not bad either.
Mm. All right.
We're talking to the great Howie Rose. Obviously, many years on TV, now you're the voice on radio, and I would think that you prefer it because when you do radio, you don't miss a game. Like, I went back. Today's the 20-year anniversary of the 10-run inning against the Atlanta Braves, yeah. And what I remember is that I don't hear you on the call because it was probably one of those days where it wasn't on Fox Sports New York. Were you
right.
at the game? Were you watching
yes,
it? What's
I was.
Your memory of that?
It's a very personal memory, and my daughter Alyssa tells this a lot, and it's pretty emotional. Evan, you're a parent, and Joe, you're a parent, so you'll understand this. It was 20 years ago, which means Alyssa was just a little shy of her 11th birthday. And so it was fireworks night, too, not that that really matters.
Right.
But we were sitting downstairs in the stands watching the game, and you kind of got a feeling the way things were trending in that inning. With Terry Mulholland, the lefty, going to pitch to Piazza, and just all, you know, the momentum that the Mets had built in that inning just snowballing into what became an avalanche to the Braves. Before Mulholland threw his first pitch to Piazza, I turned to Alyssa and I said, "Watch, Mike's going to hit a home run here." And wouldn't you know it, he does. And Alyssa looks at me, and I'm telling you, her eyes are jumping out of her head. She says, "Daddy, you're unbelievable." And I told her, "I'll bet you 30,000 people in the stands said the same thing before that pitch. I said to you. You just kind of felt it coming. Maybe you guys did, maybe you didn't, but that's just how it felt to me." And Alyssa still loves telling that story.
It's funny, and I tweeted this morning, and I've had arguments about this, and this is not a knock on Piazza, the moment is epic, but to me it was Fonzie. It was all about the Edgardo Alfonso at-bat because he's behind 1-2, he's fouling pitches off, and he gets the base hit to tie the game, and I completely agree with you. Once the game was tied because of that Fonzie hit, yeah, there was this air of confidence of course they're going to win this game, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I honestly did feel the home run coming, but what does that mean? Mike's the one who hit it, but I'll bet you at least half that ballpark probably felt the same way.
Talking to the great Howie Rose, of course, the radio voice of the New York Mets. What's your thoughts on, hopefully the season gets off, who knows, but I mean, still, we hope so with the 60 games and all that. But what's your thoughts about, first of all, what's your thought about starting a runner at second base with nobody out to start the 10th inning? What's your thoughts on that, Howie?
I'm very surprised at myself, and maybe it's the product of being a broadcaster who is at every game. And I say that because I would be lying if there were times when, particularly in a season where it didn't look like the Mets were going anywhere, and you know you really have to fight to maintain your edge, especially later in the season.
Yep,
when you get a long game in a meaningless season, as a broadcaster, and I'm only speaking for myself, I would find myself thinking from time to time, just get this over with already. I'll be back tomorrow. There's a fresh game tomorrow. Being at the ballpark for me is not unique, but for most of the other people in that ballpark who paid to get in that night, it is unique. So I remember being a fan. I wish the games would go all day. But, you know, taking into consideration the unusual realities of this particular year, where, you know, just being out in public is not what it was, and it is not without a significant degree of trepidation that I approach this season, that I have to admit, I don't mind it. It's corny, it's different, it's almost as goofy as the NHL shootout, but at this point, who wants to be in the ballpark for 4 or 5 hours if we don't have to be? You know, you want to get back to the safest surroundings you can.
I understand in the short term because of the year we're in. We're in a very unique year. I don't know if you feel this way. I'd almost rather have a tie. I'd rather say, all right, game's over, it's a tie, as opposed to kind of a gimmicky way to determining a winner, much like the NHL.
Well, we would have had the ties, I guess, if there was a negotiated settlement. And I think that was the plan, that you know they would consider tie games at the end of about 12 innings, I think it was. There's not much of an appetite in the game at all for long extra inning games any longer because the games take longer. And I once mentioned to a member of the front office, I said, you guys must like these games going three and a half hours because you sell more stuff, right? And he said, well, no. He says, we don't love the long games because take a look out in the seventh and eighth inning and see what the crowd looks like compared to what it did at the beginning of the game. And he's right. Because, you know, we sit basically in the crowd now, and it is noticeably thinner the longer the game goes, even before you get to the ninth inning. So, you know, it's all part of, I guess, the ongoing process to try to figure a way to move the games along a little bit. But, you know, what baseball is markedly different from any other sport. No clock, there's only so far you can go. But for this year, I think anything goes. So universal DH, I'm all for it. Some of the other gimmicks they want to try, yeah, I'm all for it. Because if ever there was a time to experiment at the highest level, this is it.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, and hopefully Cespedes is all right. Because, boy, what a year for the universal DH, the last year of Cespedes. Yeah. That would be good.
And you know what?
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. As long as if he can hit,
right.
then
right.
obviously he can really provide something. And I don't know where you guys stand on this, but I've kind of decreed that I will no longer die on the hill of keeping the DH in the National League either, because I just think its time has come. And I think we've talked about this on the air a little bit. I know it drives it nuts
yes.
in particular.
Yes.
But Bob Waterman from the Elias Sports Bureau crunched some numbers for me in the last couple of weeks because I wanted to have access to this,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, going back since the National League expanded, and actually the American League too, in 1998 when we got to 30 teams, the amount of plate appearances by pitchers have plummeted to the point where now, as of last year, on average, a National League pitcher, and I'm talking about, you know, for each side, not combined, but for each side, a National League pitcher appeared in the batter's box on average twice per game. Used to be more, obviously.
Right.
And, you know, you didn't used to pinch hit as much as you do now. So I think it's, you know, to put up the fuss, as we as traditionalists do, for what amounts to two plate appearances a game over 162 games, I mean, look, nobody's paying to see a manager double switch either, right? Much less a pitcher hit. So these Bartolo Colon moments, or these Mr. Koo moments,
yes,
you know, they come along on average, what, once a decade? All right, I'll sacrifice that.
Well, you know what it is? We're not dying on the hill anymore. We're dead on the hill. It's over. Like, I think as somebody that still would argue, let the pitcher hit, I still like that strategy of it. The handwriting's on the wall. It's over. That bringing it in this year means we're going to get it permanently. If it's not in 2021, it's going to be in 2022. So I think it, for me, and I think for a lot of others, we're kind of confessing that we lost. We battled, we fought, and the train is moving too fast. That
yeah.
It's just done.
Well, and here's why I think it makes sense now, apart from the numbers I just gave you. If you're a manager in the National League, and I mean, Terry Collins told me this probably 5 years ago, he was on board with this. I once said to him, look, if we've reached the point where, and this is when the rosters were 25, if you've got a 25-man roster, and we're going, in many cases, with 13 pitchers leaves you four position players on your bench,
right.
One of whom is your backup catcher, who you're reluctant to hit for anyway. One of the others probably can't hit to begin with. So your hands are tied. I mean, you've got managers who have had to manage games almost with both hands tied behind their backs because they have no flexibility and no maneuverability from the few bench players that they have on any given night to where it you saw how many position players pitched and, you know, pitchers pinch hitting and all that nonsense. I mean, I just think it got to a point where with 13 pitchers on a staff, you can't have a four-man bench in the National League if the pitcher's spot is going to come up. How many times do we have to watch double switches and, you know, everything else that, you know, people think is such an important part of the strategy of the game? I really don't anymore. So, yeah, Evan, I think it's over. We lost.
Yep.
Howie, now as far as you broadcasting the games, Will you do all? You won't travel with the team. You'll do the home games, I'm assuming, from Citi Field, and then what, the road games from Citi Field as well?
Yes, sir. That's the only way I'm doing them because, you know, we're at the ballpark, we're outdoors. And Joe and I are the same age. Evan, I'm almost curious to know from you guys if you have different sort of sensibilities and opinions about where some of these things all lie. But, you know, Joe and I are at an age, as is, I think, every Mets broadcaster, with the exception of Wayne, is in a more vulnerable position. And as such, you know, we need to take as many precautions as possible. And the advantage of being at the ballpark, home and road, is that you're outdoors. And obviously that mitigates against coronavirus significantly. So I'm all about taking as many precautions as possible, not as many chances.
What do you think, assuming we get a season, fingers crossed, you know, we actually start this season, what do you think it's going to look like? What do you think it's going to play like? A 60-game kind of sprint to the finish?
Well, I think in that context, if we can just assume, which obviously is impossible, but at least for the sake of this conversation, just say that, you know, most teams won't be terribly impacted by losing players to COVID, and that whatever losses rosters incur are more along the lines of injuries, which makes for more of a normal context to this answer. I think it's going to be great. I think obviously you're going to have starting pitchers not going as far early as later, but to paraphrase Yogi, it gets late early this year, right? So every game is going to be managed with a little bit more urgency than certainly an April or May game would. And Bobby Valentine was on our Sunday show just a few days ago, and he basically said as much, that he would manage, you know, for the schedule as much as manage for that game. Bobby's the guy who always used to say the most important game we play is the game we're playing tonight, and that takes on an even greater significance now. So I think in that sense, you're going to see a lot of pedal to the metal, but you just hope that guys don't pop their hamstring getting that pedal down to the metal. And that is what concerns me, too. Will this period of preparation be sufficient from a competitive standpoint to get these guys where they need to be to play a championship season?
How about no fans in the building now? I know there's been many, many nights with the Mets when there hasn't been too many fans in the building, you know, over the years. But how strange is it going to be, Hal, that there's no fans at all? I mean, you think that will it affect anything at all in your mind?
It's such a great question, Joe. And I can't answer it because until I get there, it's hypothetical. But I will say this, and this speaks further to the urgency of being in the ballpark, home and road. And you can't really understand this. And I don't say this condescendingly. Please don't think I do. You can't understand this unless you're a broadcaster. Because the same with you guys. I'm not talking about necessarily being a play-by-play broadcaster, but we've got different ways of building adrenaline and raising our energy level. But for a play-by-play guy, you are reliant to sometimes a large extent on the crowd to help get you through that. You know, you could play a long game on Saturday night and then come right back for a day game the next day. And no matter how much Bigelow tea you're drinking to get all caffeinated and everything else that you need to get you ready and maybe pump your adrenaline a little faster than it normally would, you know, you're just not there when you get to the ballpark. And the crowd helps get you there. So that's a little bit of a concern of mine, yeah. We've got experience working in places, obviously the Marlins, you know, there's hardly anybody there when we're there. And you have to fight whatever tendency there might be to allow complacency to creep in. But generally, I think we do that fairly well. But this is uncharted waters for everybody. I know a lot of people have expressed concern about, well, the player's going to hear you. You know, if I get on somebody for not hustling down to first base or something like that, you know, are they going to be turning around and going, hey, well, shut up, you know? I suppose we'll find out. But that is an interesting question because there's no real precedent for it, at least as far as I'm concerned.
We are 3 weeks and 2 days away from what is scheduled to be opening day. And for me personally, 1 minute I'm excited. I'm fired up. I just can't wait for baseball. The next minute I say, yeah, right, I'll believe it when I see it. How do you feel right now as a longtime baseball fan? Are you excited? Well, what's kind of, what are you thinking about?
I think right now my trepidation certainly, I would say, dilutes my excitement. I wouldn't say it supersedes it necessarily, but again, being in that age range, you can't ignore science, and I've got my concerns. So it certainly mitigates some of what would normally be the excitement building up to opening day. Plus, spring training is a pretty good buffer for, you know, getting you out of the winter doldrums, if that's what they are, and into the road that leads to the season, because you've got the ability to be at those games, kind of build up. Forget the games. Spring training games are awful. They're a complete waste of time. But being, you know, being in the environment where you're reconnecting with the players and you're hearing, I know this sounds cliche, the crack of the bat, and you're smelling the grass and you're hearing the pounding of the ball into the mitts. Believe me, that's significant stuff. Anybody who loves baseball. And so when I hear that and I see it at the ballpark, I'm sure I'll be re-energized all over again. But knowing the difficulties inherent in getting a season like this off the ground, maintaining it, and seeing it through to its conclusion is going to temper some of that natural enthusiasm. But the beauty of this game, as you guys know, is that it can help overcome a lot. And I really believe when I'm in that booth, particularly for a game that's being played in front of me as opposed to on a monitor, that I'll be able to block out the fact that there are no fans there and the inherent love that we have for the game and the unique beauties of baseball are going to take over, and I will revel in the experience of being back in the booth, because it's not my job. It's a career. It's an avocation. I'm so blessed to be able to do something I love so much for a living and to do it for the team that I've grown up loving, that all of that stuff I think is going to take over once that first pitch is en route to the plate.
Now, Hal, before I let you go, is the golf game getting better? I have to ask you that.
Well, it's not an easy answer because I'm hitting the ball better.
Your ball striking is a lot better is what you said.
Yes, the ball striking has improved.
Right.
To where I now should be scoring
right.
10 strokes less than I do, because I learned this game the wrong way. Especially at my age, I should have learned the short game first. I have no short game.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like Daniel Simpson Day has no great point average. You know, Howie Rose has no short game. So I've got to learn that. I should be 10 strokes better than I am.
Right.
So I'm still shooting around 100.
No, hey, look, it's a hard, believe me, Al, it's a hard game. There's no doubt.
All right.
I don't have to tell you that, right?
What's your handicap?
My game.
Come on.
No, well, I mean, I'm like you. I mean, I have days when I can go out there and look like I actually can play. I've been playing a lot. I've been playing in the morning a lot. My wife plays, which makes it a lot better, and she's pretty good. I mean, she's, you know, every bit as good as me. I think if I'm playing my best and she's playing my best, I'll probably beat her by a few shots, but she's pretty good. I would have to say that. I could go out there, and I played the other day. I played 9 holes a lot. We belong to a 9-hole club.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's perfect. I play 9 holes. I come back and do the show just about every day. That's the way I play it.
So what do you shoot for 9
holes?
I shot a 49 yesterday, and I felt like I accomplished something.
Yeah. No, if I'm breaking 50, I'm happy. I actually shot a 44 Sunday, which is the best round I've had.
I can't talk to you. You're in a different league.
No. But I can. No, but with that said, I could go out there tomorrow and shoot a 58. Hal, you know what I mean?
That's
where I'm at. I mean, I could look like I can actually play some days, and then I go out there some days and I'm just like, oh my God! I mean, how could I be this bad? You know what I mean? So that's
how
I
know exactly what you mean. It's a sick game.
It's a sick game, but it's an addictive. It's very addicting.
It is. Evan, do you play?
I've started to watch the last couple of weeks because I need some sports to watch.
Tell him you bet on Dustin Johnson.
Yeah.
You won the tournament this
That's
week.
That's right. I hit on Dustin Johnson over the weekend. I was watching Abraham Answer 2 weeks earlier. So this is my introduction to golf by gambling.
Wait
on
a minute,
Howie.
But so that's where you're – you talk about a short game. Is that where you're – I mean, are you considering playing?
I will tell you, I didn't mention this to Joe. Three days ago.
To the range? Did you go to a range?
I'm breaking news here.
Breaking news.
Did you go to a range, bro?
No. 3 days ago, I found my old golf clubs I bought years ago, barely used them.
Okay.
And I took my driver out, and I just practiced swinging. That's all I did. I just kind of...
Don't do that.
Was swinging. That's all I was doing.
You're young. You could. Don't make the mistake I made.
Right.
Put the driver away. Get somebody to teach you the short game. Get them to teach you to chip, putt, and hit out of the sand.
Yep. You're right.
When that happens, give me the guy's phone number because I need help.
What did they say, Hal? What did they say to pros say? You drive for show, you putt for dough.
Yeah, and you putt for dough.
And that is 100% correct.
But here's the problem. So I'm watching these professionals, and I'm enamored by Bryson DeChambeau, and all I want to do is hit the ball as far as I can. That's what's intriguing to me in this moment, is just getting it and just hitting the ball as far as I can. That's my intrigue level right now.
Guess what?
What?
One day you will, right? You'll
hit
one off the tee that sails.
Right.
And the next hole, you'll get that driver out and you'll top it and it'll go 20 yards.
Right. That's exactly right.
You're probably right.
And you know what, Howie? It could be in back-to-back holes that he does that.
Yeah, probably.
Howie.
If I were you, I'd throw those clubs away now and run so fast you'll save yourself so much agony. You'll live 5 years longer.
You know what I need, Howie? I need baseball back. If I get baseball back, I probably wouldn't even be thinking about any of this kind of stuff.
There you go.
There'll be a day, though. I tell them this, Howie, all the time. There'll be a day when that's the only game left you're going to be able to play.
That's true. That's why I took it up.
Yep. No doubt.
Because I don't play cards. I hate cards. I'm not Fred Merck.
You want to be outside. You want to be out there and actually, you know, that's the beauty of it. You're out there. You actually, you know, you're hitting a ball. I mean, you're actually playing a game outside, right?
Yeah. It's maddening, but it's fun.
It is.
Howie,
it is.
Great talking to you.
Howie,
we can't wait to hear you do the
looking
broadcast.
Looking forward to hearing you call the games, man.
Guys, thanks so much. It'll be great to be back in business. And let's just hope that we get started and finish without interruption.
That's the whole.
Everybody's safe and healthy. You guys stay safe and well.
You too,
Howie. Be well. Good talking to you, man. The great Howie Rose.
You'll actually be able to hear him after us. We're going to do a Saturday show between 10 and 12. Howie's on right after that. And then him and Susan have been doing shows every Sunday morning.
Right.
And hopefully soon you'll hear him. You'll hear Susan and John doing the Yankees. And we'll get baseball back.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.